All eyes have been on the presidential race the past 2 weeks as the National Party conventions dominated primetime political coverage. But this election cycle, Republicans also dearly want to win control of the U.S. Senate, where the Democrats now hold a slim majority. And this November, the Senate's political balance could be decided by just a few crucial races. We wanted to check in on the status of some of those tight campaigns. So with us from Monitor Studios in Washington, D.C., just back from the convention in Charlotte, is Nathan Gonzalez, deputy editor of the Rothenberg Political Report. Nathan, thanks for talking with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And Nathan, as we compare various lists, it looks like about 7 or 8 states are generally considered true toss-ups. And why don't we talk first about Missouri? Because this is a state that has been in the news quite a bit because of the controversial comment made by one of the candidates, Representative Todd Akin, about what he calls legitimate rape. Now, there are many Republican Party leaders who believe that basically lost the race for Akin, and the incumbent Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill will win. Now, the New York Times still lists it as a toss-up, but you don't seem to quite see it as tight. Why don't you think the Missouri Senate race is still quite in play?
Well, we did move it to a category leaning toward the Democrats, and it's not specifically because of Congressman Akin's comments. I don't think that even though his comments have generated such controversy that they were necessarily disqualifying in a conservative state like Missouri. But I think the reason why we moved the race is because outside Republican groups, the National Republican Senatorial Committee, which their entire existence is to get Republicans back into the majority, have said that they will not spend money on his behalf. And I think that's a problem. It's tough to beat an incumbent, whether it's for the U.S. Senate or for the House. And so to defeat someone like Senator Claire McCaskill, Todd Akin would need all the help he can get. He's never proven to be a good fundraiser. So right now, he's out on an island by himself. And unless he can somehow show that he can come up with some money to unseat the senator, I think that McCaskill has the advantage. That being said, there are still a couple things we're watching in the race. Todd Akin still has 2 weeks left to petition a court to get off the ballot, and Republicans would be able to replace him as the nominee. That would be a game changer.
Of course, this is very late in the race for someone else to be jumping in. Is it realistic that someone could enter now and still stand a chance of winning?
I think it is. I mean, Claire McCaskill's, even though there's been this controversy, Claire McCaskill's numbers have not bounced upward. I think she's still in a critical position. It's just she has the fortune of facing someone who is more polarizing and who's taking the headlines away from her. Republicans have plenty of ammunition to use against her, tying her to the president in a state that the president is not going to win in November.
Now, another interesting U.S. Senate race is the one in Maine for the seat being vacated by Republican Senator Olympia Snowe. This is actually a three-way race. It's one that includes an independent, the former Maine governor, Angus King. Is King viewed as splitting the ticket, as independents often do? And if so, is it the Democratic or Republican candidate who seems to benefit from that?
Well, this is a fascinating race that could get even messier after the election. But Democrats have essentially shunned their nominee, state legislator Cynthia Dill. If she were to call Democratic strategists here in Washington, they would not pick up because Democrats are concerned that if there are two candidates that divide the Democratic vote, the independent vote in the center, that will allow the Republican to win. And they've seen this movie before. They saw it in 2010 when Maine elected a Republican governor with just 39%. Because there was a credible Democratic nominee and a credible third-party candidate. So what Democrats have done in this race, they are going on the assumption, they're willing to bet that Angus King will caucus with them when he's elected. Even though Governor King has not said who he will caucus with, if he will caucus with anyone at all, but Democrats are willing to take that gamble.
In fact, Nathan, we have a piece of sound of King being non-committal on that issue, and this is him on CNN a few months ago.
I'm not going to make a decision until I get down there. If I announce now I'm going to caucus with the Democrat or the Republicans, it sort of defeats the purpose of what I'm going to do, of what I want to do, which is to steer a middle course and to remain independent as long as I possibly can. Look, I'm not naive. I don't have illusions that I can go down there and Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid are going to put their arms around me and ask me how to solve these problems. But I do think that I can go down and remain independent as long as possible.
Now, Nathan, King's Democratic opponent Cynthia Dill has said, and this is a quote, "Maine voters deserve to know who their next U.S. senator is going to support to lead the Senate. And I just can't imagine an uninformed electorate would not want to know that until after the election." Again, those are both quotes by his opponent. How long do you think King can put off committing to a Republican or Democratic caucus, and is not committing so far hurting or helping him?
Well, I think he'll be able to not answer that question through Election Day, unless Cynthia Dill is somehow able to get support from grassroots Democratic groups that are able to help her raise money and increase her profile. I do think King will be able to maintain this position that he has now through the election. Then it starts to get tricky when the senators-elect show up in Washington in January. They start caucusing, and if the seat in Maine hinges on who controls the body for the next Congress, then he's going to have to make a decision.
Now, also, I want to turn to Massachusetts, and we may have to divide this conversation over an upcoming break. But this state where we are, of course, is where Republican Scott Brown won a special election to take over the seat left empty by Senator Ted Kennedy when he died. That win was a real upheaval in Massachusetts, since this tends to be a very liberal state, and Scott Brown is a Republican. He's now running against Democrat Elizabeth Warren. It's a very tight race. Why do you think it's so close in a state that's historically so to the left?
Well, it's the symbolism of it. I think a lot of Democrats are still beside themselves that a Republican is sitting in Ted Kennedy's seat. I just came back from the convention, and one of the high points of the Democratic convention is when they replayed the clips of Ted Kennedy debating Mitt Romney. I mean, the place was electrified, and so this is a priority for Democrats in not only maintaining the majority, but just getting it back because of who the seat used to belong to.
And your sense of which way the Brown-Warren race in Massachusetts may turn out?
Well, we have it as a pure toss-up, and I think it's going to be more millions of dollars being spent, and it's going to be close.
But you, at this point, do you want to call, or do you think that it's hard to say? It's close.
I think if I were to tell you who was going to win, I would be guessing.
All right.
I think we still have a little while to let this play out.
We'll leave it at a tight race. We're speaking with Nathan Gonzalez of the Rothenberg Political Report about some of the tight U.S. Senate races across the country. We'll have more with him after a quick break. Back in a minute, here and now. Welcome back to our conversation about some of the hotly contested U.S. Senate races around the country. Our guest is Nathan Gonzalez. He's deputy editor of the Rothenberg Political Report. And Nathan, the Virginia Senate race is also a lively one. And as I understand it, the coal industry is a big factor. Could you tell us about the players and the issues there?
Well, Virginia is one of the key states to watch in November, not just because of the Senate race, but because of the presidential race. And I think you have two known quantities in the Senate race. You have former governor, former U.S. Senator George Allen, the Republican, and former governor, former DNC chairman Tim Kaine on the Democratic side. And the polls, it's neck and neck. Any poll that shows either one of them up by more than 2 or 3 points, I just don't believe it, because these are known quantities. And specifically on the coal issue, this is one of the ways that Tim Kaine is trying to balance the different roles that he's had. I think he would point out that as governor, Virginia opened a hybrid plant in southwest Virginia, very conservative part of the state. But Republicans will point out his connections to President Obama, bringing up the cap and trade bill and what that will allegedly do to the coal industry. And so that's just one. The coal issue is one example of how this has become a partisan race, where I think George Allen would prefer to be, prefer to ride in on a Romney victory. But Tim Kaine is trying to define himself back as his time as governor rather than his more recent years as chairman of the DNC.
Now, George Allen yanked his campaign ads as of August 31st, and he said nothing on the air since, although he is scheduled to put something else out again after September 11th. His campaign says that's a strategic move because more money will be watching TV as the fall season gets started. His opponent says it's because Allen is having funding troubles. What sort of impact would you expect to see of him not having any ads on during that period?
I think by the time we get to November, we won't look back and say that George Allen not being on the air for a period of time in early September was the deciding factor in the race. I mean, running in Virginia is expensive because you have to run, if you're going to run statewide ads, you have to run in the Washington, D.C. media market. But both of them are such known quantities, like I said before, that I think both parties will have enough money to get their message out, and people will be well aware of where the candidates stand, and it'll be more about persuasion rather than just getting your name ID out there.
One state that was really interesting to me as I read about this was North Dakota. I was reminded how relatively small the population is there, fewer than 700,000 residents, which is apparently, it makes it a high priority on in-person campaigning because the low population actually makes it possible to meet a lot of people. And I understand it's also a state where, even though it's generally considered conservative, a candidate's personality can sometimes trump his or her politics. How do you see those quirks of North Dakota politics playing out in this race?
Well, it is it's also fascinating because North Dakota, I believe, has the lowest lowest unemployment rate of any state in the country because of the oil boon. I think it's unemployment is at 3%.
We'll probably
get an email after this correcting if I'm wrong on that. But it is fascinating where personalities and candidate quality matters. And Democrats nominated a former state attorney general, Heidi Heitkamp. And she's running against Congressman Rick Berg, who represents the entire state because there's just one congressional district. But Heidi Heitkamp hasn't been on the ballot in 10 years, and I think it's part of a case of distance makes the heart grow fonder. And I think voters view her very fondly, and in part because 10 years ago she ran for governor, and during the final week, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and her hair was literally falling out on election day because of the treatment she was undergoing. And people, I think they really have latched on to that part, and they feel for her, and they really have a connection to her. And frankly, Congressman Rick Berg, he came into Congress in 2010 by defeating a Democratic incumbent, but it was a very bloody and bruising race. His negatives went up because of the attack ads that he endured, and he just hasn't been able to climb out of it. And we've been waiting for Republicans. Republicans were convinced that in the last 4 years, Heidi Heitkamp has been a proponent of President Obama and his health care bill, and they were convinced that that would simply delegitimize her as a candidate, but the attack ads haven't taken enough hold to bring her down, and it's a very competitive race.
Nathan, in terms of national party support for these candidates, referencing Maine, the three-party state we talked about, the three-way race, the Democratic nominee, Cynthia Dill, has been complaining that she's not getting any help from the party. In general, how strong would you say the national parties are out there for their candidates? Are the Republicans doing better than the Democrats or vice versa?
You're right. With the exception of Maine, where Democrats are ignoring their nominee, both national parties, the NRSC and the DSCC, the two groups, will be in big in the races that we're talking about. And that's why I continue to believe that the candidates will have enough money, the parties will have enough money. Sure, there will be money from outside groups, but these won't be decided because one candidate just isn't well known, that when voters go to the ballot and say, oh, I don't even know who that candidate is. I think these toss-up and these competitive races will be decided on the issues and the candidates.
And the breakdown right now in the U.S. Senate is 51 Democrats, 47 Republicans, 2 independents. That's now. What do you think the spread will look like after November?
Well, right now we give a range, and the range is we expect Republicans to pick up between 1 and 4 seats, which means that it's a toss-up. And we have to remember that in order for Republicans to get the majority, they need to gain 4 seats to get to 51. But they could gain 3 seats to get to 50, and if Mitt Romney wins, then Vice President Paul Ryan would be the tiebreaker, and that would be enough to control the body. And then it all comes back to Maine. What happens if Maine is where Angus King decides, whether he decides to stay independent or caucus with the Democrats, that could throw a wrench and protract things even further.
Interesting. And as you said, if he doesn't commit to a caucus before the election, we may not really know until well after the election which way he'll lean once he gets in there.
It could be January, and it will be in uncharted waters there.
That's Nathan Gonzalez, deputy editor of the Rothenberg Political Report. Nathan, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Tomorrow on Here and Now, from Somalia to Starbucks, how being a barista helped one woman learn English with a little faux Italian thrown in and get U.S. citizenship. Still ahead today, the separatist party in Quebec wins an election, but is secession from Canada its top issue? News is next, Here and Now.